You know, if you're new, first time, or if you're just joining us online, we've been in this series called Breathing Room. Just as a heads up, you're kind of coming in at the end of the movie, end of the series. However, I would encourage you to go to our website, newlifewichita.com, where you can catch up on all of these messages. And again, if you've missed any of this series, especially we're still on the front end, kind of officially of 2018, if you've missed any of this, please go back and catch up on these, because if you apply just the simple content of what we talked about over the last few weeks, it could completely change your year, your 2018, and your relationship. So I would encourage you to do that, because we've said from the very beginning that breathing room is the space between our current pace and our limits. Our current pace and our limits. It's a space between our financial pace, our schedule pace, our relationships pace, and our limits. And for too many people, and we know this is true, like this isn't like a big something shocking news, but far too many people, there's just not enough space, there's not enough breathing room in our lives, and we just live our lives right on the limit. We just live our lives with loaded schedules. We live our lives where there's no margin financially. And today we're going to talk about how to create space. And we talked about creating space in our calendars and financially. And today we're going to talk about how to create space, create breathing room in relationships. Because the problem is, in our effort to get the most out of life and to squeeze as much as we can into everything, we just squeeze in one thing after another, after another, after another. And eventually everything collapses or just implodes. Everything just crashes in. You know, if you're a 90s kid or you're a 90s parent, to quote the philosophy of Mulan, it only takes one grain of rice to tip the scale. You know, and so it's like, you know, you get that final grain of rice, it tips your scale, but it just tips you right over the edge. And for some of you, you've had this happen. You know, you went home and you got that one email or that one text, but it was like just one more in a series of emails or texts from the same person you've been having this exchange between, and you just broke down. Or maybe you decided, you know what, I want to see how tough my laptop or phone actually is, and it went across the room. Or, you know, or you just sat down and you put your hand in your head. Your head in your hands is just like, you know, it's just the last straw. For some of you, you had a financial meltdown. It was just one more bump, you know, that last unexpected expense or that one last bit of unexpected or bad news. It was that $125, $150 speeding ticket you got on the way home because you have no margin or breathing room in your calendar and you're rushing all the time, you know, and you get that ticket or it's that last envelope that comes in the mail, and suddenly for you, it's like, that's it. You just have this breaking moment. And in our effort to just cram one more thing into our schedule, into our lives, and into our finances, eventually there's a meltdown, a breakdown, and a collapse. In fact, some of you may be on the verge of this in a crucial relationship in your life, or in a marriage, or with your kids. Some of you are on the verge of this, or some of you've already had this happen. You've already had this happen in the past, and you've just sworn you're never going to let this happen again, where you just have no time in your schedule or no room in your finances, where there's just such little space. You know, I'm not going to lose another relationship or lose another love of my life because of it, or alienate the people that are closest to me. And yet you find yourselves kind of back in the same pattern of behavior and the same old habits, because as we said from the beginning, that relationships are better when there's breathing room. But relationships die when we try to always live at our limits. And so today, as we wrap up this series, we're going to talk specifically about relationships. And the cool thing is there's a good percentage of you that you are single, you're not married. And so the good news is, especially, you know, if you're young, you can have the opportunity to learn and apply some things today that will tee you up and set you up to establish breathing room in your life and to carry that into a marriage and ultimately, potentially, into a family. And it will affect everything. And if you are married, this could completely change the dynamic of your marriage for 2018 or protect you in the future. And I'm so passionate about this because I'm so passionate about seeing relationships and marriages and families thrive, and especially marriage, because I don't know about you, for those of you that are married, you're getting married, but I didn't get married or I didn't want to get married to just have a marriage where I just, you know, I want to defend marriage, you know, or I'm just simply committed to marriage. You know, I've consistently shared, and Sean and I, you know, when we came into marriage, we both came in with our own kind of U-Haul truck loads of baggage that we brought into the relationship, and we were very different, totally opposite in many ways, which not surprisingly would create friction from time to time. And if I'm being 100% authentic, and we've shared this publicly before, because we just feel like this is a truth for a lot of us, is there were times that not only did we not feel love towards one another, but we kind of hated each other. It's like you just learn to sleep with one eye open. And it's just, you know, but here's the thing, though, is we were not simply satisfied with just staying married. You know, we were going to just stay committed to marriage. We just believed that wasn't enough. Because I don't know about you, for those of you who are married, but when I got married, I didn't marry marriage. I married Shauna. Shauna didn't marry marriage. She married me. When I said I do, I was saying I do to this intelligent, compassionate, hardworking, good-looking green-eyed blonde, and I just wanted to experience life with her and all that marriage had to offer, for better or for worse. And we didn't want our relationship to get to the point where we were just toughing it out, you know, and we're just committed to staying married. And then especially to add on top of that, once we became parents, because it's like, okay, now we have these children and we want to offer them more than that. Now, I do think people should be committed to staying married. But if that's all you've got, it's not a lot of fun. It's just like, you know what, we're committed. We're not enjoying it, but, you know, we're committed. We're in this. And again, there may be a place for that or even seasons for that. But neither of us wanted to operate from that mindset. I wanted her to be happy when she heard the garage door going up because I was coming home. You know, she wanted me to enjoy coming home. I wanted her to enjoy me coming home. You know, we wanted to experience this, but I realized early on, because of my work schedule, I was going to have to make some decisions. It was getting the place where I would come home, and especially we started pretty early with kids. You know, I would come home and she would be exhausted, and there was a part of me that started to feel like, you know, this was my fault, not just because I helped procreate these children, but because, you know, I was gone, and, you know, and she's tired, and she's trying to carry this load, and things were tough. And then, so there were times, especially early on in my career, where I would be at home, but I'd be thinking of work, or I'd be at work, and I'd be thinking about home. And so finally, for me, this culminated to a point where I had to make some key decisions about my life. And so I'll tell you about that in a minute, but I'm going to talk a little bit about the tension that all of us face eventually at some point, because there's a tension that we face, and we have to make some decisions about it. Because when we hand our husband or our wife, or our children, we hand them a responsibility that they're not equipped to carry or that they really shouldn't carry. It's like we're handing them a block, handing them a rock, or handing them a block. And it's like, you know, honey, you know, I got to go to work, but I'm going to be gone for a long time. I'm going to have to start working late. I'm going to have to start working long hours. I'm going to be traveling more than normal. You know, and I just need you to, like carry this responsibility that I know it belongs to me. But, you know, here's the things, you know, I got something else to do, somewhere else to do, so I just need you to carry this for a while. And we all know that there's going to be times, there's going to be days, there's going to be weeks, and maybe even seasons where, a short season where we have to say to our spouse or say to our kids, like, hey, I need you to carry this for a while, you know, kids, you know, mom or dad has to be gone, you know, I need to travel some more, whatever it is, I need to work a little bit harder, I need to work some longer hours. You know, mom or dad, you know, I'm going to miss a weekend or two. I'm going to miss a ball game or two or whatever it is. And so we hand our kids or our spouse this load and we have them carry it. And the load represents the responsibility that we should carry. And what happens when we ask them to carry it? Well, they accept it because, you know, well, I want to be a good husband or I want to be a good wife or, you know, I want to be a good son or a good daughter. And so I understand that, you got to work hard and you got to make these things happen. So I want to be a good son or daughter. I know that mommy and daddy, you know, you work hard. And yeah, you know, I'll miss you. And, you know, I wish you were at the game or I'll miss you because you won't be home at night or whatever it is. But you know what? I can carry the load. I can carry that. And so they carry the load. But the problem comes when we leave them with that rock, when we leave them with that block, and then they end up carrying it for longer than they should. And it's just like, you know, time goes by and it slowly starts to wear on them. And then suddenly you start to feel a tension in the relationship, or maybe there's conflict, or there's difficulty. But then it's like you're confused, like I don't understand where this is coming from. And so here's how you know when you've handed off a load onto somebody else. The first thing is when you're constantly repeating promises to do better. When you find yourself constantly repeating promises to do better. It's like, honey, I promise I'm going to do better. I know I've done it again. I know I came home late again. I know I overscheduled again. I overcommitted again. I'm late again. And you prioritize somebody over them. You prioritize somebody else over them. Or daddy's going to do better. Mommy's going to do better. And you promise and you promise and you promise and nothing changes. And they keep carrying that load. And you know how we can make ourselves feel better? We can show up every once in a while and go, hey, honey, how's that block? How you doing? And I know you're carrying that thing. How you doing? You got this and you can do this and I believe in you and I really appreciate it. And here's some flowers or here's a gift, here's whatever it is. And we cheer them off and then we just go on back to whatever else it is that we were doing. The other way you've handed this off is if you're chronically absent from important events. If you find yourself just like, you miss another ball game, you miss another match, you miss another performance, you miss another recital, you miss another birthday. It's, honey, I'm sorry, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be gone again. Honey, I'm sorry. I'm going to miss our anniversary. I'm going to miss it again. We're going to have to postpone our date night. And the third way is you keep pointing to the future to make up for the past. You keep pointing to the future. It's like, honey, it's going to be better. It's going to be better next summer, next spring, next Christmas, next Thanksgiving, next year, next time, whatever it is. It's like, I know I miss it again, but next time. It's just chronic. And it just keeps getting repeated. And then things just don't change. And you keep having the same conversations about the same things over and over, which means you've handed over a burden that somebody, your spouse, your kids, your family, is not meant to carry with them. And eventually their mental willingness to carry your load, or maybe they get to the point where psychologically or even physically, they just can't do it anymore, and they just drop it. I can't carry it anymore. And when the rock drops in a marriage or a family, for men, see, our tendency is like, because we think in boxes, right? Our tendency is to look at the event. We tend to look at that one moment. It's just like, we look at this immediate event, and we look at it, and we're like befuddled. And it's just like, I don't know what happened. Like, all I said was pass the ketchup, and she like broke into tears, or she like threw it in a perfect spiral right at my head. It was like really perfect. Or all I said was, over the phone was, honey, I think I'm going to be about 5 minutes late. And she hung up the phone, and I come home, and she's not talking to me, or she left. She's like not even there. Or I said to my daughter, honey, I probably won't be there to the end of the program. And now she's in the room with her door locked and headphones on, and she won't talk to me. It's like all I did. And we focus in on that one moment. What we don't understand is it was the final step in a series of steps over a long period of time. And they just couldn't carry it one step further, and they dropped the rock. And when the rock drops, sometimes grades plummet. Intimacy evaporates. It's gone. So they can't carry it one more step. Sometimes you tell your spouse, honey, I got to be out one more night, or I'm going to be late again. And what you kind of thought you'd see in their eyes was disappointment, but what you think you're reading is that they're kind of glad, because it's just easier when you're not here. See, if you haven't been there, someday you might be there. And there's nothing worse than when the rock drops in a family. Because sometimes when it drops, there's irreparable damage. Sometimes it can signal the end of a relationship. Sometimes, even though some of the pieces can be put back together, it's just a little bit like Humpty Dumpty, and you can't get all the pieces back exactly as they were. Sometimes it takes seasons. Sometimes it takes years to bring about the trust that was lost in that season. When you ask someone to carry a load that you were meant to carry because you had something else to do and somewhere else to be, and you left it with them a little bit too long. And I understand. I understand why this happens to all of us, because the reason this happens is we love progress. We love progress at work or in the marketplace, the industry where you work in, or in the world that I work in, whatever it is. It's like we love progress. And here's the deal. When I go to work, I can measure progress. When you go to work, you can measure progress. When I come home, I can't measure progress. Like there's no progress. Like I'm just home. If I stay and I work for an extra 2 hours, like I can measure that. I can get stuff done. I can check stuff off my list. I can get that, you know, a few more emails sent or replied to. I can get a few more texts and make a few more calls. I can get some things done and then, you know, say to somebody, you know, hey, I finished something. When I go home, I'm just home. It's just like, and like most of you, like I can't make any extra money at home. There are no awards banquets at home. I've never received a trophy at home or a nice, you know, award or, you know, there's no financial bonuses connected with being at home. You're just home, and I understand that. And I believe that the desire for progress and to move forward and to advance is a thumbprint of God in us because He's a creative God. He's a God about progress. But when our desire and our quest for progress and moving forward and moving upward in our career, that's not a bad thing. Or maybe it's even a side passion or a hobby, and we want to invest a lot of time in that because we want to get better at it, or we want to make a name for us, or whatever it is. Those are all good things, but when it begins to compete with the fundamental, with the essential things, when you begin to cheat what's most important for the purpose of something that's secondary, that's a problem. With all of the as a backdrop and just knowing all of that, I had to make some decisions early on in my relationship about what I would do and what I wanted my marriage and what I wanted my family to look like. And for I wanted that for our sake as a couple, as a family, but also because I knew I was going to stand up in front of people just like you, and I'm going to say, hey, here's what Jesus says. Here's what the writers of the New Testament say about how we're to treat one another. Here's what it says about marriage. And I taught it, I believed it, and so early in marriage, I faced a brand new application of these teachings, of Jesus' teaching and Paul's teaching. You know, for our purpose this morning, Paul writes this, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. And this is the introduction to something that he's about to say to me as a husband, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So submit simply means that I place myself under. That I'm going to put your desire, I'm going to take your desires and put those above my desires. So submit means to my wife Shauna is submit means that whatever you desire and need, I'm going to do my absolute best to try and fulfill and meet what you desire and what you need. I've never been called as a man to submit myself to my career, even if my career is the local church. I've never been called as a man to submit my desire to create a name for myself. I've never been called as a man to submit my drive to make more money in my life or to build a big organization. But my Heavenly Father says I am to submit, but I'm to submit to a person. And then he goes right to the heart of the issue. He says, husbands, here's what it looks like to submit yourselves to one another, especially in submitting yourself to your wife. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. And just in case we were unclear as to what that meant, and gave himself up for her. So husbands, how are you to love your wives? You're supposed to love them how? As Christ loved the church, not as you think she deserves to be loved. Husbands, love your wife as the greatest, most courageous man to ever walk this planet loved you, loved people, loved this world, loved the community, loved the church. Well, what does that look like? Well, it means that if you follow Christ's example, that you give yourself up for her. It means that you submit your ambition for her sake. It means that you submit your desire for progress or advancing your career and your income and making a name for yourself. All of those good things that God put on your heart to do, that you submit all of that for the sake of her. And so because I knew these things and I taught these things, I believed these things years ago, I knew I had to figure out a way to create breathing room in my marriage. At the time, I wouldn't have called it breathing room. I call it something else. But I needed to figure out how do I put Shauna ahead of my career, and which ultimately means you, the local church. How do I put my wife first? Now, for me, the good news is I didn't simply have to do this out of reverence for Christ. It wasn't like, I don't really like her, but I like Christ, so, you know, for his sake, I'll do it. You know, it wasn't that, you know, I'm going to submit myself for his sake. And some of you may be in a marriage where, at the moment, you don't really like each other. And maybe initially what you do is you show that reverence purely out of reverence for Christ. But the good news, the awesome thing is by doing this, you can regain reverence for one another as you treat one another reverently. But fortunately, we hadn't gotten to this, so we weren't nearing collapse. Things just need a little tweaking. So I still love my wife, so it was a good thing. And it's like, I got to figure this thing out. So, but I'll tell you what the obstacle was. And this is something that we talked about the first week of this series. And this is the thing that wars against all of us, having breathing room with our time and our money and all of that, and that's fear. It's fear. For me, especially, it was especially in first starting out in ministry, because everything, when you go into full-time ministry, everything is about people and their needs and what's going on in their life. And it's like, it was like, well, what if I don't do this other thing? What if I don't measure up? What will people think? How might they interpret that? It might come across that, you know, if I don't show up and do this thing, that I'm lazy or that I'm antisocial or that I'm not bought in. And none of us want others to think that we're afraid. You know, but what drives the breathing room right out of our lives many times is fear. And in my case, it was thinking about the people that I worked with. And it was about thinking about all the needs of people, people who mattered to me, people like you. And it's just because of my life, I embraced this calling many, many years ago where at times it can feel, and I'm not complaining, I'm just saying it is what it is, but it's a heavy weight on the shoulders. It's like what Paul says in one of his letters to a church in a city called Corinth, when he writes, "Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for the churches," because when you're in this, you have concern for the people. And it's like, if I'm awake, you're always with me. And the people that aren't in this room, the people that are in this city, the nearly 50% of the people in this city that would say, no religious affiliation for me, and people that are just trying to figure out life and relationships and money and all of that, they are on my mind. And sometimes you kind of slip into my dreams, and I really wish you'd stay out because I'm thinking about you. And it's just like wondering, you know, what's going on in your life? How are you doing? How's that marriage? How are the kids? How's that singleness going? And those things. And it's like it's a daily concern for the mental, physical, relational, spiritual, financial health and well-being, your joy level, all of that, your transformational level, your personal growth in your pursuit of God and trying to get a grip and understand and have more of Him in your life. It's just always there. And so there was that fear and still is. I live with it. Well, what if I don't put in 50 hours a week or 60 hours or 70 or plus hours? There's always more that can be done. There's always more conversations to be had or people to meet with. It's like, what happens if I tell people, no, I can't meet with you? Not because I have another appointment, but I'm just going to be home with my wife and my dumb dog, and that's it. That's why I can't be with you. That's why I can't meet with you. And especially launching New Life, because New Life, if any of you have ever like started up a business or an organization, that's what this is. And then I live on top of that knowing that 80% of church plants fail. And most of the guys that plant a church are about half my age. I don't know if that works in my favor or not, but it's like living with that as well. And it's like you wrestle with, you know, God, can you build this church if I don't put in 50, 60, 70 hours a week or more? Will you do that? Will people still keep coming? Will they give? Will they be reaching out to others? Will we grow? Will they grow? Is it going to work? And granted, even in the season of launching New Life, as there have been in the past, there's been short seasons that demanded a lot more time. But when we knew that was coming, then my wife and I, we sat, we had a conversation, we knew it was coming. There would be a beginning and an end to that season. And then it forced me to be creative. Especially early on, putting my wife and family first. I've always been kind of a morning person, which I know is annoying to about half of you, but I've always been kind of a morning person, but I especially became a morning person because one of the things with Shauna is mornings weren't a big deal. First off, my wife is an introvert, and her like lots of coffee, no talking. That's her perfect morning right there. And, you know, the kids are always kind of half comatose anyways, and they had a routine. And so she's like, you don't need, if you're not here in the mornings, that doesn't make a difference. It was the evenings for her. So I would meet people, and they'd say, hey, can we get together? And I'd say, yeah, why don't we meet at 5 on Tuesday in the afternoon? No, the morning. First half, that thins out a whole crowd of people. But man, I oftentimes I would start meeting people at 5, and by 9 o'clock I was so loaded with caffeine. I've had 2 or 3 meetings, productive. It's also one of the reasons for me exercise is important, and I started years ago working out early in the morning because I know I could go and do this thing and not take away from my wife and my family. And so that way too, for me, I had the type of flexibility with my schedule that I could work my hours. I could get off early enough to go pick the boys up from school and get them home. And so I would meet with people as early as they liked or for lunch. And so, especially with our kids were young, I tried to make it to the various events that they would have and the different parties at school with loads of like sugar cookies and things. There would be days like I also limited it to where it'd be two nights a week that I would be out and away from the family. And on those days that I knew I'd be out, well, I'd try and go in a little bit later, or I'd still come home in the afternoon so that we could be together as a family before I went out. And while I didn't write it down anywhere, I made a commitment. And that was that for my job, for my career, I was going to give about 45 hours a week. Because in my mind, I thought, you know, a lot of the people that are part of the community, they're working 40 hours a week, and then we're working to get them involved and connected into serving and volunteering. And so, you know, my job is the church. And so I felt like to be fair and to honor the people that I'm trying to lead, I don't want to ask something from them that I'm not willing to give myself. And so years ago, made that commitment. And again, like all of us, there's always going to be something that will come up that will be a little extra demanding, but during that time, then you have a conversation and you talk about it beforehand. Again, a beginning and an end, you stick with it. And even as we've launched this awesome thing that we call New Life Wichita, literally a year ago, well, a year and a week ago, we launched this in this short window of time. It's introduced me, it's been a refresher for me because it can be so tempting to just could easily give 70 hours a week and it still wouldn't be enough. But it has introduced me to pray a very specific prayer. God, will you build as big and wonderful and awesome a church as you can on my 45 hours a week, because you and I both know that's all I got. And I'll be satisfied with whatever you place into those 45 hours. And doing so, the prayer changes from this: Lord, take care of things at home while I take care of things at work, to Lord, take care of things at work while I take care of things at home. And it doesn't matter your business or career or your industry, there is an application of this for you. You may never have a role where you have the flexibility of being able, where you can not, you know, go in earlier so you can knock off earlier and pick your kids up from school. That's not the point. The point is that you are going to face options. You're going to face a series of decisions in your life and throughout your life and relationships to work longer hours, to be gone more, to do more, by saying yes to the opportunity. It will always mean saying no to your spouse or no to your kids, no to your children. And you ask them to carry a load so that you can progress. And once in a while, a couple and a family, they can agree on this, share the burden together for a short time or a short season together, but to make a pattern of it. To make a pattern of it, where it's just to make it ongoing, to ask the people closest to us to carry a burden that they should not and cannot carry for an extended period of time, well, it will ultimately lead to hurting the relationship. And it becomes, do you think, God, that he could possibly take care of things at work? You know, God, are you able to do that? God who created the economy, God who created mankind, God omniscient, who knows everything past, present, and future, God who knows your name. Do you think, God, you could handle things at work while I handle things at home? And the answer is, of course he can, because you know what? Here's the truth. Here's the truth about me. I really only have two unique roles in my life. For my whole life, no matter how long I live, I have two unique roles. The one is first husband to Shauna, and the second is father to my kids. That's it. Anything else, anyone else can and eventually will do. Somebody else eventually will lead this community, either because I'm dead or because it's time for me to pass the baton on to a younger and far more gifted leader, and he'll do better. There'll be somebody else that leads this. My only two unique roles at this stage of my life is first husband to Shauna, and hopefully only. She can get another, but I will be the only first. Father to my kids, and I will always be their father. So why in the world would I trade what is unique for something someone else can and will eventually do? See, I've seen enough marriages look like this, and they get cluttered enough in the relationships, and in the relationships between fathers and sons and fathers and daughters. And it just looks like this, and I've just talked to too many men, especially who are trying to rebuild and they're trying to put things back together. And for far too many, it's too late. Or I've talked to individuals that are working or struggling to repair damage or to rebuild bridges because they let so much time pass as they focus doing and being something else and they're trying to rebridge this gap. Because remember, as we said, you only get to do your teens once. You only get to do your 20s once. You only get to do your 30s and your 40s and your 50s one time, which means your kids only get to be toddlers once. It means they only get to play the first year of that sport one time. There's only one first recital and one last recital. There's one first basketball game, there's one last basketball game. There's only one last performance, and then it's gone, and you do not get to redo any of that. So why in the world would you trade what you have that is unique for something someone else can and eventually will do? Years ago, I thought, there's no way in the world I want to miss this. I don't care what we live in. I don't care what I have to drive. And I drove some hoopties that my kids, could you drop us off like 10 blocks away from school? We don't want to see anybody, anybody see us in this vehicle. And even though I care deeply, deeply, as I still do, for people and life transformation and seeing the church grow, it was like, you know what, there's no way I'm going to miss out on this. So here's what I would say to you. Don't trade what's unique for you for something somebody else will do. Because that's a bad trade. That's a bad trade. And if you make that trade, and I could promise this, you're going to look back and you're going to want to relive it. You're going to want to go back and do it differently. And as I said, I've said in this series, I've made a lot of mistakes as a husband and as a dad. I can't believe Shauna put up with me for 1 year, let alone almost 30. But one thing that I did well was this. I was pretty strict. I was very strict about the number of hours that I would work. I made being home in the evenings a priority. Even when I got home from demanding days, I might take a little extra time, 5-10 minutes on the drive. There were a few times I parked around before I went home, and I just prayed, God, help me be the husband and dad that I need to be, because it's been a long or maybe a hard day. And then I would go home and get into the house, and I would go and I would kiss my introvert wife, maybe pat her on the butt, and then I would say, honey, why don't you go back in the back and you can read or do whatever you want. I got the kids. You know, I planned time alone with my wife regularly, every month. I planned months in advance trips for our family. They were usually camping because, you know, single pastor salary, Disney World was not in the cards for us, which is okay. I've been there. It's like, that's a horrible mistake. It's just like, but, you know, camping is a family, tent camping is a family. I would plan these things. And to this day, you know, I've got a trip for Sean and I plan for 14 months from now. Already. And it doesn't mean that I'm like all that great. I'm just saying, here's what it looks like. Here's an example of what it looks like to love your wife as Christ loved the church and lay your life down for her and to make her and your family a priority. Because here's the thing, even with all of that, there were seasons that I look back and I say, you know what? There were times that I compromised and I cheated my family when I should have cheated my career. And I can promise you, you're going to want to redo that, but you can't. So the only way to avoid or minimize regret and to have the kind of relationships that you truly want is to create breathing room. Because relationships thrive when there's space between your current pace and performance and your limits. And I don't want you to look back and wonder what God might have done if you would have trusted him. To look back and wonder what God might have done if I had not allowed fear or maybe even greed, if I'm honest, to drive me. I wonder what would have happened if I'd taken seriously what Jesus said when he said, don't worry about tomorrow. Don't worry about the food you're going to eat, the clothes you're going to wear. Your Heavenly Father who loves you, he knows what you need even before you ask. What would it look like to not worry about tomorrow for you? And to do what God has called you to do while you trust him to do what he's promised to do. What would that look like? To do what you should do at home and pray that he will fill in the gaps at work instead of you trying to do what you feel like you need to do at work and hope that he will fill in the gaps at home and in your relationships. I don't want you to miss this stage or get to the end of this season of your life and look back and wonder, I wonder what God might have done in my 20s or my 30s if I just trusted Him with my dating life, with my morality, with my sexuality, with my finances. If I trusted Him with the early years of my marriage or the early years of my family, I wonder what God might have done through and in me if I would have said no to that opportunity, no to the overtime, no to the move, no to the transfer, no to more traveling. If I had said no in order to say yes to what I know God, what God wants me to do in my unique role, I wonder what God would have done through me. I wonder what story I'd be able to tell my kids or my grandkids if I had trusted Him in those moments where somebody was going to get cheated. And instead of cheating my family, I decided to cheat my career. Now, there are enough regrets in life that we create, that we experience, that are unavoidable because either we lacked information or somebody else created them for us. But why look back on this season of life and wonder what God might have done in your relationships if you'd taken Him seriously and taken Him seriously in the most repeated command in the Bible? The most repeated command in the Bible is this: fear not. Fear not. Fear not. I am with you. That's the only way to create breathing room, create space, the space that is needed for your relationships to thrive. Because no matter how much money you have, and no matter how many people know your name, you are only as happy as your relationships. Why would you trade what is unique for you for something somebody else is eventually going to do? So to end this series in your desire and your quest to get the most out of life, let's not lose control of life. Or let's regain control of life. Let's allow God to teach us to step back from our limits and create breathing room where we need breathing room, and trust God to fill in that gap in the middle, to trust Him to do what He wants to do in and through us for the remainder of our days on this earth. Let's pray. Father, you're good and you're gracious, and Father, especially in this driven Western culture where we have been provided so many options and distractions and so much wealth that we just don't even have a clue. I pray that you would do a work in us as we are coming into the end of the first month of this year. The Father, that you would help us to pause, to look at our time, to look at our money, and to look at how we're handling our most important relationships with our family. And I pray, God, that you would truly help us to move out those things that are unimportant or distractions or even unhealthy. And that you, God, would empower us. That through your Spirit, you would lead us into being more focused and more effective in the things that matter most. And I pray for every relationship in this room, for those that are looking to marriage, those that are married, God, that you truly would help all of us, because we are driven. We're driven in this culture, and that, God, you would help us to just honestly evaluate how it is that we're spending and investing our time and where it is that we need to make some adjustments, so that we truly love one another as you've called us to love, and submit to one another as you've called us to submit. And it's in the name of Jesus I pray. Amen.